Good afternoon. Joining us on the line now is Adam Alter. He's Professor of Marketing and Psychology at New York University's Stern School of Business. His latest book, Anatomy of a Breakthrough, explores why we get stuck and what we can do about it. He shows you how to optimize your life, overcome obstacles, and reach your full potential. Welcome to the show, Adam.
Thanks so much for having me, Hannah.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you for joining us. So why did you decide to write this book? What was the kind of inspiration behind it?
Well, one of the things I discovered in some of the research I was doing as a grad student about 20 years ago was that people, particularly in the West, but not just in the West, tended to be blindsided by change. And that meant that they were often stuck. And these changes that we were not expecting tend to happen every 18 to 36 months in our lives on average, which means that we're constantly having to change, pivot, do things differently. And that leads us to get frequently stuck.
It's a horrible feeling being stuck, isn't it? If you feel like you're stuck in a job, in a relationship, or in a house, or it could be all kinds of reasons to feel stuck, but it's not nice feeling kind of stuck or trapped.
No, not at all. And that's what people tell you. When you look at the responses these people give, they say they feel anxious and isolated and lonely. They also imagine that they're alone in this situation, that there's not much they can do about it. But actually getting stuck is a universal experience. We all have it. And there does, it turns out, happen to be a roadmap for getting unstuck, which is what I've been exploring for the last couple of decades.
Yeah, one of the things you introduce us to in the book is the friction audit. How does that work then?
Yeah, it's basically a three-step process. It's a matter of finding where friction is in your life. And friction is essentially another way of describing what it feels like to be stuck, that you're up against something that you just can't quite move past. And so the first step is locating those friction points. The second step is managing them or dealing with them or sanding them down, to use a metaphor. And the third step is making sure that what you've done has been successful. And in the book, I talk about three essential things that you have to do. You have to basically figure out how to respond emotionally to these experiences of being stuck. As you said, it's a very negative experience. Then you've got to figure out some strategies, and then you've got to work out what to actually do, the right actions to take. And so I walk through all of the different considerations for each of those in the book.
Yeah, because the idea of realizing that you can get yourself out of feeling stuck is a really empowering thing.
It turns out to be the most important first thing is getting used to the idea that you are where you are, even if it's an unpleasant situation. And once you've done that, it turns out that's a huge part of moving forward. And so a lot of people try to bypass that step by immediately acting because they sort of flail in the face of this stuckness. But it turns out that we are much more effective if we just pause for a few minutes, sometimes hours, sometimes even maybe a couple of days, to consider our options before we move forward. And I explain what that actually means. It's not just sitting still. It's a series of emotional responses that tend to make us much more effective.
Yeah. One of the things that I hear a lot on various podcasts and things that I listen to are people feeling like they're stuck in a relationship, which is, not a good place to be. Often it could be that you've been with the person for a long time. It could be that there's children involved, and it's not always as well. It seems like it's not always as easy to just get up and leave, especially when there's children involved. But whenever you hear people giving advice, it does boil down to the fact that it can be that easy if you want it to be. You know, there are all kinds of systems in place that can help you in that situation, depending on what the situation is, whether there's abuse or things like that. So if you do want to leave a relationship, you can do it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's a matter of sitting with the decision for a little bit, making sure that it's as well thought through a decision as it can be. And obviously this is a very emotional situation for people. And so they want to make sure that they, of course, work through those emotions, but also ultimately make a decision that on all the various relevant dimensions makes a lot of sense to them. And it needs to be well thought through. So as long as you are sitting for a minute, making that decision carefully, you're right. Often it is just a matter of leaving if that's the right thing to do. And depending on the situation, obviously where there isn't abuse, there might be more complexity to the decision. But once you make that move, you want to make sure that it's the right one, that it's the one that's going to lead to the greatest likelihood of positive outcomes moving forward.
Yeah. And likewise with a job, you know, we spend a lot of time in a job and at work. And if you're really not happy in your job for whatever reasons that may be, you don't need to stay in it. You know, it could be that you have to leave and get a lesser job or maybe go for less money or you know, there's sacrifices that might need to be made. But the point is there are choices out there. There are jobs to go around.
Yeah, exactly. And I think when we make these very big decisions, we have this sort of illusion of irrevocability, that once we've made those decisions, there's no going back. It feels like a momentous change in our lives. A lot of the decisions we make that are big can be to some extent undone if we decide they need to be. And if they can't, there are still many paths forward. You know, people often underestimate how many options they have as they move forward. And once they've made a decision, various pathways open up to them. And that idea, understanding that and recognizing it, empowers you in making decisions about relationships and jobs and other very big decisions in our lives.
Yeah, because money is a big thing. Obviously, I'm sure most people can relate to it at some point in their lives, going through a, you know, situations where they haven't got a lot of money. They're worried about paying the rent, that kind of thing. It's a worrying place to be. But there's so much. I've interviewed so many people over the years who have come up with really, really interesting ways on making money. You know, lots of women who are at home with children who aren't able to, you know, have the career that they maybe have once had, or just had to take a break in their career because of having children, have come up with all kinds of ways to make money whilst they're at home. There's so much out there. You know, you need to think for a bit and work out what you enjoy, what you're good at. But there's a lot of opportunity out there.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think one of the very interesting things about motherhood and having to leave the workplace, if that's what happens, is it turns out the number of skills you acquire as a mother to a young child is astronomical. You know, you're acquiring all sorts of different skills that themselves are unbelievably useful in all sorts of different professional avenues. And so if you recognize that connection between what it means to be a mother, how much you're managing and doing at home, and what those skills can bring to various different ways of making money in future, whether they're through professional routes or otherwise, I think you feel much more empowered in recognizing that. And that's true about a lot of the things we do in our lives. We often fail to make the connection between the skills we've acquired and the experiences we've had and how they can be applied in future. And once you recognize that, you are much more powerful and I think much more motivated to make those big changes.
Mm. Another thing you talk about in the book is the midlife crisis, which is an interesting thing to talk about. And a lot of people will experience, whether they want to call it that or not, a moment in their lives where they kind of think, okay, where am I? Where have I going? What have I been doing for the last 20, 30 years? What am I going to do for the next 20, 30 years? I should have more money in the bank by now. I still don't own a property. You know, all these different things. I haven't got a nice car, whatever it might be, and start to kind of panic a bit. So it's good to have these tools in place so you can try and not panic in those moments.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny. We've done some research in my own lab at NYU, and one of the things we found is that there is indeed something like a midlife crisis. But every decade, when our age ends in a nine, when we're 29, 39, 49, 59, and so on, we see the passage of time because we start thinking about a new decade, and it pushes us to reconsider our lives in interesting ways. And so you see all sorts of really interesting behaviors. People sign up to run their first marathon, for example. And they do all sorts of other things that signal this attempt to kind of gain extra control over their lives as they realize that time is passing quicker than they may otherwise realize. But the point is that we have a tremendous amount of control over our decisions and the situations we place ourselves in. And it's just a matter of zooming back and looking at your life and spending maybe a few hours just to think about where you are and where you'd like to be in a year and 5 years and 10 years down the line, and making the kinds of strategic decisions that will put you in that situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's so important to do that, because if you don't, all you can do is not feel good about the situation that you're in, and
exactly.
That's not going to get you anywhere.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. I think just acting, you know, when we talk about being stuck, that's obviously, there's a sense of inaction there, whether you're struggling with writer's block or to make a big decision about a relationship or a job. It doesn't matter what kind of stuckness you're experiencing. It's inaction in essence. And so acting, doing something, even if you're moving sideways initially, that sort of greases the wheels and makes it easier to move forward in future. So very often the best thing you can do is to start acting in very small ways. And then you seem to feel more unstuck, and that has its own momentum and pushes you forward.
Yeah. And can I ask you about the title of your book, Anatomy of a Breakthrough? Why did you call it that?
Yeah, it's basically the way I think of it is just as if you were a doctor and you were looking at a body and trying to figure out what was going on with that particular body. If someone wasn't feeling well, you're essentially looking at the anatomy and trying to figure out what the physiological problem might be with that person. And stuckness is very similar. You mentioned the friction audit earlier on. It's about figuring out how to respond. And so that is, I use the metaphor heart. It's about figuring out how to strategize moving forward. And so then I talk about head. And then it's also about figuring out what to do. And so that's, you know, the limbs of the body and the metaphor of actually taking action and moving forward. So the body and the anatomy of the body was, I thought, a pretty good representation of what it's like to get unstuck. It's about gearing that body up to act and then acting in a way that's productive and that moves you forward.
Yeah, good. Well, if people want to get a copy of the book, it's called Anatomy of a Breakthrough, and it's available on our website, tre.radio. It's by Adam Alter, who we've been chatting with today. Adam, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, Hannah. I appreciate it.